Welcome to the Home Fires Radio Show. I'm Ellen Witcher, pinch hitting for Patty Kostelic, who's somewhere on vacation, I believe. And there are five people here in the studio with me tonight. We're going to be talking about old houses in Fairbanks. The guests tonight are Janet Matheson, Fairbanks architect. She did the Rosamond Weller School, among other things. And she was project coordinator for the Fairbanks Historic Building Survey, which we'll be talking about later. And then also we have Randall and Debbie Wallace, who live in one of Fairbanks' oldest houses, the Mary Lee Davis House. They live there with their two children and their collie and at least four cats, maybe more coming. I see the walking tourists stopping there quite often. And then we have Charlotte Ames, who's, well, Charlotte Ames, everybody knows her, I guess. Mm-hmm. She was born in Fairbanks, and she's lived in the same neighborhood all her life. Isn't that so? Mm-hmm. And she really can pound out a good tune on the piano. She used to play for the Sourdough Dance Club when we were there. And then we have Edna Lawson. She's wife of the Carrot King. And she also was born in Fairbanks. The house where she grew up is still standing down on First Avenue. And she was Queen Regent last year, weren't you? Or you still are until the next one. That's right. So anyway, if you've listened to the Home Fires Radio Show, you know we're a very informal group and we just do a lot of talking. So first of all, I wanted to ask Janet something about that book, that the Fairbanks, I just call it Old Fairbanks Homes, but I know that isn't the name of it, but it was a book that the city of Fairbanks put out with all the photographs of the old houses and old buildings, and I know a lot of people wish they could get their hands on a copy, but maybe you'd tell us a bit how that all came about.
Well, in the winter of 77-78, Tina Stonaroff, who's now gone back east, and I went to a city council meeting and suggested the council ask for community block development grant money and dedicate $5,000 to $10,000 of it to doing a survey of all the old buildings around town. As it happened, they asked for the money, they got the money, and we started work on it. They advertised for proposals, of course. I happened to get the job, and I started in March of 78.
Well, it must have been quite a job. I know you had a lot of people working on it, and the way I happened to find out about it, I was out in the garden one day, and a girl with a clipboard came along the street. That was Jane Dalboom, I learned, and she was asking me about houses, and she told me, you know, that this was coming about. And then sometime later, my husband came home with a book under his arm, and that's how I found it. But are there any copies available anywhere? Are they going to do another edition?
There aren't any left. The first printing was advertised by Joanne Wold in the Newsminer, one of her columns, and the entire printing was all gone in 10 days. It was given away free. The second printing, I believe, was sold at $5 a copy, and they just ran out of the last copy just before Christmas last year. I think they're going to republish this year. The Historic Commission has gotten some money from the state this year, and I think they're going to use it to republish the book.
Oh, I see. And you were on the Historic Commission at one time.
Yes, I was on it for 2 years.
Oh, and now you're on the Beautification Commission.
Well, I was.
Oh, you were.
For 2 years.
Oh, that's right. You're busy with your other things. Well, it's a lot of fun to look in that book and see houses, and some of them aren't here anymore, and others have changed quite a bit, but I think it's wonderful that at least we have pictures of. I was particularly interested in the houses because I've always been interested in domestic architecture. But now your house, I'm talking to the Wallaces now. When did you get your house? When did you buy your house?
We moved in September 1st of 77.
In 77? Oh,
yes.
And I know in Janet's book it says that you're going to do it all over just as it was at one time. And I know that's quite a project. So you have to take it a little bit at a time, don't you? But what are your plans for it?
Well, we've probably given up on restoring it exactly the way it was, but we'd like to at least get it back to that approximate period. I'd like to see wallpaper in all the rooms, and we need to refinish our hardwood floors. Those had been covered with wall-to-wall carpeting. Mm-hmm. Someone had painted at one time all the oak trim in the dining room and living room, and we've stripped about half that, and so we have that job to finish. Lots of things like that.
Mm-hmm. I should mention that their house is the one at the corner of 5th and Cowles. I had a friend here years ago from Missouri, and she loved that house. She said, oh, that reminds me of home. And someone else said, oh, I just love that porch. And the, I know the walking tour, I saw the people gathered around it the other day. What are they telling them about your house?
Do you know? I've never gone out to listen, but they've come not this year, but the year before, to the door to ask what we knew about the house, and we told them some sources to check and told them little gossipy things that we knew about it that would make it more interesting. The tourist groups in the summer are so large, the walking tour groups that come at about 10 in the morning and again at 2 in the afternoon, they're just too large to ever invite all those people to come in. But once in a while, we'll see someone on a Sunday, maybe, who's bought the little booklet, and they're doing the walking tour on their own. And if things are calm enough inside to make their visit to Fairbanks a little nicer, we've invited them in from time to time and shown them through the downstairs.
Oh, I see. Well, I know that Edna knows a lot about that house, and probably Charlotte, too. I remember it as the Loftus house, because those were the people that I knew, they lived in the house when I went there.
Yes.
But you, Edna, knows it long before that, don't you?
Yes, I remember when the Effie Company bought the home. And the Egglestons were the first people that had moved in, and they were the vice president of the Effie Company. And then the Roy Erlings were the next ones. And after that, it was Bert Ogburn, the Bert Ogburns. And I believe that followed the Jim and Alta Crawford. And then Audrey and Ted Loftus, I believe, were the last mm-hmm. ones to live in the home.
As an Effie home.
As an Effie home, yes. And I believe then after that was the home bought by Mr. Anderson from Bethel. He was a
Dee
pilot.
Waters and Andersons and
yes,
that bunch
that's
are all
right.
mixed in from 64.
Mm-hmm.
Before you. Uh-huh.
Yes, I've forgotten about the Dee Waters, but they did live there. And then the Andersons, he was a pilot for Wien Airlines, and they lived in it.
Well, I remember when Audrey had it, and there was a great round dining room table and the big sideboard and the chairs, and I was told that they had come around the horn. And who brought that? Where'd that furniture come from?
Well, that came from the Davises brought it in, didn't they?
That came from the Noyes house, the mortuary mm-hmm. on Illinois, and when that house was changed from a staff house into a staff house, then they moved the nice furniture that had sit there and brought it down to Cowles. And it stayed there until 62 or 4.
And then it was
sold out of the house, and then we bought it back in 78.
Mm-hmm. How did you get it back?
It had been around town.
In different places, wasn't it separated?
One piece is separated still. And it had never
it
been...
we know where it is.
It had never been in the house anyway. And but the other ones, there's 14 chairs and a table and sideboard and
a small I think it might be called a butler serving table, and then there's the large mirrored buffet, and
that's the one
the table, which is 5 feet in diameter when it's closed and has 7 leaves, so it will go to 12 12
you
feet
have a large dining room,
and we have all the chairs, fortunately. The china closet is in a good home, and the lady who has it is a longtime Fairbanks, and I won't mention her name, but we joke with her and ask her when she's going to reunite our furniture and let us have that china cabinet. And she kids us back and asks us when we're going to sell the rest of the set to her. So it's a pleasant, humorous battle going on.
And Edna, you told me that your son, when he was in high school, used to it's probably not the same stoke.
Well, when Richard was going to high school, he worked over there for the Burt Ogburns, and he fired their coal furnace, that stoker, and he thought that winter he worked there, that it snowed every night, because he had to shovel all the snow from Fifth Avenue clear on to Cowell Street and on down from Fifth to Fourth and Cowell's before he went to school.
Oh, my goodness.
And it just seemed like it was a daily job for him, but he did it.
It's the same furnace still in there.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we still meet with the same furnace.
And a coal fired?
Yes.
Is that right?
And Debbie fills a stoker.
No, we have a son who's almost 14, and he helps his dad. I'm relieved of that duty.
Mm-hmm. Well, my son, Dick, was 14 years of age at the time when he was doing that.
You see, so.
What a coincidence.
Yeah. Well, Charlotte, you told me that you were born in a house across the street from where you now live on Fifth.
That's right.
But that cabin isn't there anymore. Well, no, I know someone else's house is there. And then your dad built the house that the Buttreviches now live in.
That's
on
right.
The corner of
Grace and
Fourth,
John Buttrevich on Fifth
and
Avenue
in
Cowell's. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to say, Edna, that
Fifth
when before your son did that job, because my brother is so much older than your son would have been, you know, they're not the same age, my brother Charles Wainer used to do that same job, but he did it for the Eggleston family in that house, and that's really about all I know about that house.
Well, that's nice to know. I didn't know
yes,
that.
But anyway, yes, I was born in a three-room log cabin that was right across from where I live now. The Cy Clawson's home is situated right about where our cabin was, and when I was about 12 years old, well, we did move into the building that my dad had to put on the Fifth and Bonnefield. That the Buttreviches have now. My father bought that property. At that time, there was no Bonnefield Street beyond Fifth Avenue as you came from First Avenue over. It stopped at Fifth. And my father bought the property for back taxes. It's about 60 feet wide and over 200 feet long, this lot was that he got. And I seem to think, I might be wrong, but I just recall that Dad got it, I think, for something like $11. That big piece of property, what it would be worth today. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the Buttreviches, as I was going to say, our family moved in there when I was 12. Dad didn't get the place all completed in 1 year. He started clearing the brush one winter, and then the next year, he did a little more. And we had a very good family friend by the name of Jack Bailey, who was an excellent carpenter. And he's one that I should say that Dad helped him more than he helped Dad, because they both worked at it. And the house was very comfortable. Originally, it was a log house, peeled logs. I can still see all the family taking turns trying to peel these logs. And after they were put in place, it looked pretty raggy from the outside. And as time went by, Dad finally put a V siding over the house, and that was painted, and it improved it a great deal. And then when the Buttreviches bought that house, I might say, too, that this took place about 1924, I think, or 25 when we moved in there. But when Buttreviches bought the house, Johnny had a log siding put over the outside. The interior is very much the same as to plan. They haven't changed the floor plan very much. But putting on this new siding and adding a garage makes it the very attractive home it is now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of memories in that place.
Well, there are a lot of memories all around town. Janet, some of the new houses there aren't very many new houses being built in town, are there? Well, there's one in our neighborhood. You're doing the house on the corner of 9th and Kellum?
No.
Someone told me that you designed that.
Oh, no, I did a floor plan for them.
Oh, I see. Well, where Sam White's house used to be. But so many of the old houses have come down, and then, the lot seems to be filled up with townhouses or condominiums or something, and I suppose that's inevitable, but not very pleasant in some places. But I was wondering if any more of the little houses are going to be moved to Alaska Land. Do you know, are there any plans for adding to the Gold Rush Town or whatever they call it out that part of Alaska Land?
Well, I know that they do want to put the cabins that are already out there on more permanent foundations. Uh-huh. They were trying to get a state grant for that this year, which the governor kept vetoing. I don't think there's much room out there for many more, and I'm not really sure what the Alaska Land Commission and the park superintendent are going to do, mm-hmm. because I know people do offer them buildings mm-hmm. pretty often during the year.
Yeah, there are so many there. You see them and you think, oh, that house used to be in such and such a place. And then I know, I think it was Delta Kappa Gamma or one of the sororities put out some years ago a little guide to all the cabins telling where they used to stand. I don't know whether that's still available or not.
It's out of print.
Oh, it is out of print. A collector's item. I was hoping maybe some member of Delta Kappa Gamma would phone in and tell us where there were extra copies. And that reminds me, I forgot to say that, you know, you can join us on this show by calling 474-5044 and maybe you want to ask a question or just make a comment, or we'd be glad to hear from you. 474-5044. So I was remembering, well, the Kitty Hensley house used to be catty corner across from me, and there it is over there, and the Presbyterian Church. Mm-hmm. You there, didn't you? And well, there's so many of them. So many, I think it's wonderful that many did get moved.
How she said.
Some of them, I don't know, are any of the little Fourth Avenue houses out there? Remember those cabins? Oh, you weren't allowed on that street.
Indeed,
probably.
We were not.
No,
no way.
Well, see, I'm a newcomer here, but when I came in 49 at that time, I worked out at it was Ladd then, and there was a craft shop on Fourth Avenue, just this side. By this side, I mean west of Cushman. And I had to go there and pick up supplies. I was a craft, I had the hobby shop at the hospital. And I had a GI driver, and he said, oh, I can't go on that street. And I said, why not? And he said, well, it's off limits. I can't. I said, well, I'm just going to go in the craft shop. It won't do you any harm. Uh-uh, I can't drive on that street. And no, he wouldn't go on Fourth Avenue. And then one of the nurses at the hospital was married, and she and her husband, well, I guess maybe at that time the line wasn't in operation or not full swing. But they found a neat little, it was very hard to find a place to live, and they got a neat little cabin there, but they had to have special permission to live in it. So, but those were, I guess they were, in structure, they were typical Fairbanks cabins.
Yes, most of them are log cabins.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, so many houses, if you scratch them, they're log underneath, aren't they? So many houses are started out as a cabin, and now they've been built over and around, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. I recall one. In fact, I recall two that had started out as an old-timer's cabin and had been taken over by somebody else that used it for a while. And in our own neighborhood, the building was later used as a pen to keep or a building, like a barn for goats. And the lot was fenced, and here were these goats galloping around there all the time. And this house has since been taken over by someone who's put an addition to it. It has an apartment in the basement, and you wouldn't know when you go by that at one time it was belonged to the goats. And another one in the area was a pig barn. People had lived there in a three-room log cabin, and they bought a house across the street, and they turned this into a shelter for their pigs. And that also has been purchased by someone, and it's turned into a very attractive little home.
I bet the rhubarb grows well around it.
I notice the lawn does, too.
You know, Ron Yeager's house on the corner of 7th. That's had three add-ons, I think. Not the eighth, not these 8th and Cowles, but the 7th and Cowles. Excuse me, 6th and Cowles.
The 6th and Cowles.
Yes. That's an old log house inside with two or three additions.
Yes, it's true.
Next to Ralph LaSalle's.
That's right.
The Dale, the pad. Yeah. Oh, yes, it goes on and on and on.
If anyone ever needs old pictures, too, the university here is one of the best places to find them.
Archives.
Yeah. And there's, you're wondering what the 4th Avenue houses were like. There's a ton of pictures up there of ladies in, right, mementos, souvenir pictures. But
Edna has a historic home that she should tell us about.
Oh, yes. Got your home.
Well, I could say that, of course, I was born in a little log home on 6th and Wickersham, which, of course, is no longer there. It's just an empty lot, a very small lot. My father had bought a considerable property in that neighborhood, and my mother and father lived in that house. Well, then come 1911, mother and father had three more children, and so there were four of us, so he knew that he had to move someplace else. So he bought this home in 1911 in the 1000 block on First Avenue. Our home still stands, and it is identified by caribou and moose horns on the porch. The one at the peak of the roof was put there by my father, and it is still there. It was one of the few houses that had running water and a bathtub. And, of course, Mother and Dad were real delighted that having four children. And, of course, it is in the same block of the Episcopal Church. Now, the Episcopal Church has bought the property right up to our home. And this house had been built for Judge Kellum. And Kellum Street was named after Judge Kellum. He also built the house next door, which was later owned by Ann Schick. And before that, it was the Henry Weir home, and then they sold it to Ann Schick. And then, of course, the next house next door to them was the George Macquarie home, which is no longer there, and also Judge Clegg's little house. It's not the house that he bought later, but it was in this same block. And then Judge Clegg, they sold to the Perkopiles, and then after Perkopiles, it went to the Joe Hubbards. And, of course, that home is no longer there.
Oh, well, there still are a lot along First Avenue, aren't there?
Well, in the block now, between the Episcopal Church and our old home, there are no other places. I should say that the house that was next to the Episcopal Church was owned by Ed Stroker, and he raised his family. They lived there for some time. And then the Episcopal Church, that was one of the first pieces of property the church bought. And, of course, that is no longer there.
You mean that old cabin?
That,
A friend of mine lived there. It just went on and on, one room after another.
Then, of course, there is the house that was built by Elizabeth Ann Kreitz. And she was the granddaughter of the Macquaries, and that house still stands, and the people from the church do rent that and take care of it.
Edna, in the early 1900s, wasn't there a hospital joining the St. Matthew's Episcopal Church?
In the 1906, there was a hospital there.
That would be on the corner where they...
Not quite on the corner. There was a little log house on the corner. And then the hospital was right next to the church. But I believe they operated that until about 1915. Mm-hmm. The information, I believe, is in our booklet here, the Fairbanks City History Building of the old family houses.
And on 2nd Avenue to the back of across from the Episcopal Church, recreation room now. Isn't there an old home that had been for the nurses to live in? That Mrs. Cash lived in at one time?
That's right. The nurses lived in that and rented that.
It's still there.
Yes, it is. And, of course, it's now the working room at the church, of course.
Well, I suppose the east side of town was settled first, wasn't it? And then along First Avenue because
First Avenue.
The boats. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But I was thinking of all the old cabins over Dunkel and Hall and way over there.
Mm-hmm.
I say way over there. Just because we live on the west side of Cushman. But I mean, over in the east side, between Cushman and the river, there are so many old houses over there.
Well, the Strokers' home is one of the larger homes that's still standing up on 5th and Noble.
Noble.
And the duplex that's across from that, I don't remember what's in there now. My sister, Lil Angerman, and her husband owned that place at one time. And it's written up in Joan's book here about, or Janet, is it? Janet, sorry. It's written up in the, her book, and this was what we understood, too, that there were two sisters married, these two fellows, and they built the homes so they could be together, you know, in a duplex place. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a large, interesting home. Well, there's a lot of places up at the eastern part of old Fairbanks. But we lived in the west, western part, and even though Ed and I go by and we recognize houses that belong to different people, I just couldn't describe too many of them right now.
No, I couldn't either. I'm more familiar in our west side of them.
One thing that I got to thinking about this afternoon is where the paint pot is on 2nd Avenue, and I guess almost everybody in town knows where that is now. That was a curling club, and I believe in the early days, and everybody knows that curling is a game played on indoor ice rinks, I presume. In the early days, I think they did their curling on the river in the winter when it was frozen over. Is that not right,
Anna?
That's
right.
Okay. I belong to the ladies' curling club. I don't know whether they ever had a ladies' curling club in the real early days, but it was about in the early 30s, I think, that the women's group here organized the ladies' curling club. They had only two rinks in that building, and so the men would curl from 8 to 10, and the ladies came on from 10 to 12 to curl. And the lady mostly responsible for organizing that was Margaret Berge Ofsted. She's now a resident at the Pioneers' home now. We curled, had Bon Spiels down here. The Dawson and Whitehorse people came down, and we did make trips up to Dawson. I don't think any of us ever went to Whitehorse, but it's changed a lot now. We never did have mixed teams, you know, curling with the men until it was later, and about that time I gave up on curling. But, of course, we do still have a brand-new curling club down at Lower 2nd Avenue, and they're very active.
Debbie and Randall, have you lived in Fairbanks a long time, or
how did you
get here? Where?
From Juneau.
Oh,
yes, and before that I lived in Maryland.
Oh, I see. And you saw that old house and you wanted it.
Well, something like that, yes. when I walked into the big yellow kitchen and then saw, the more I saw, the more I fell in love with it. And it made me homesick for older homes that I had grown up around and seen in rural Maryland, where, of course, you know, their historic homes there are 200 years old.
Yeah,
so
like I
found it hard to believe that this was a historic home, but it still had that flavor to it. And we have known... so many people have come into our house for the first time and taken a look around and said either, this is exactly like the house I grew up in, or this is exactly like my grandmother's house. But everybody, no matter where they are from, what part of the United States, remembers a house exactly like the one that we live in. So it just has that feeling about it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there are quite a few like that. I'm thinking of all the new houses. Well, maybe sometime we better talk about the new houses because they're so different. I see these great houses around in the hills and think, oh, how could anybody build that? And then I come back to town and see our little old ones there. And I know I was surprised to see my house in that book because I didn't know that was anything. I mean, as you say, I came from the East, too, and a house had to be 100, 200, or 300 years old, so I didn't think there was much about mine, but after all, Fairbanks hasn't been here long enough to have any of that age. But our house Clara Rust, in her book This Old House, mentions that her friends Cleora and George Bochner are building a house across the street, and that's the one I live in. And Margaret Berge Ofsted, whom you mentioned, she lived there before I did. But although the date given in there is 1923, I talked to Cleora. Well, she's Cleora Erickson now. She lives in the Pioneer Home. And she said, no, they built that house in the 30s. So I thought maybe the number, it says 1923, maybe it was transposed, because she thought it was 1932. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they built the house. And she told me that the siding on the house came from the old courthouse, which was, where was it? I suppose it was downtown.
The federal building.
The old, was it on the, oh. And the siding from it, they took and used on this house. And she said, I pulled out all those nails. When I told my husband, he said, that explains it. These peculiar nail holes that he kept finding where there weren't nails, you see. But she said that's why that house was always so warm, because it was good seasoned wood when they built it. But anyway, there's still quite a few around in the neighborhood that have been there for a long time. Clara Rust's house is gone, but it was there when I first came. But I didn't know that too started out as a little cabin, and then when I read her book and saw the sketch of it originally, it grew into quite a house. And so, Janet, when you were, did you actually have to do a lot of hoofing around looking at these houses, or I guess everybody on your staff did, didn't they?
Well, two of us did most of the hoofing, Jane and I, and we covered the whole city. And then we went into the assessor's office and found that almost every date that we looked at wasn't correct.
No. Uh-huh. Well, I doubt that you had many complaints about it. I think people were just glad to see them, to have a picture of them to keep. But how long did it take you to do all this?
We were finished in October.
And you started in March, huh? Mm-hmm. So that was, well, I think you did pretty well to cover all that territory, both sides of town, plus all the other buildings too, and Garden Island. So how do the houses here compare with Ketchikan? They're Ketchikan a later period. I'm showing my ignorance, aren't I? Didn't you say you did a survey of Ketchikan houses?
Yes. Well, Ketchikan started off as a cannery town from the 1870s and 80s.
Oh.
But it's never had a major fire, and it's always kept its records all the way through the years. You know, they never had floods like we did. So all the records, and most of the houses are absolutely intact from when they were built. And a lot of them were built between, say, 1900 and 1930.
Oh, they are, I see. Mm-hmm. And your survey was houses built before 1940, right?
Yes. We sort of kept in that age range.
Uh-huh. And then, too, we've had at least two big fires, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
And the flood. Well, there's been more than one flood, though.
Oh, yes. Because,
that was the worst one, however.
Many, that was the worst one. Yes.
Mrs. Crawford sent us a picture. And a letter one time, and told us that when they had changed some of the front of our house, and it was a picture of Doc Gunderson, I think, and that was the flood of 1930 something, she said.
Yeah.
And they were knee deep in water on the front sidewalk, and the old awnings that are still up over the garage, the old candy striped awnings, were all up in the picture. It was must have been spring or early summer.
1938, it was.
Yeah. They had a baby and a glass milk bottles. You know, they were sitting there with a caddy full of baby bottles and a baby and two people standing there. Alaska Link told me who they were.
Yeah, we have that picture. We should show that to you sometime. You might recognize some more faces.
I'd like to see that, yes.
Sure.
And, you know, when was a bad fire? 1907?
1906. 1906 was the first bad fire.
The dentist that started that he's long gone by now, but he has a relative. That was Jerry Crow, that's lived here for quite a few years and up Point Barrow for 15 years. I think he was up there for 12 or 15. That was his great-great uncle.
Is that right?
Yeah, I never knew him, but mm-hmm. I mean, he got digging back and looking, and so that's a little.
Yes, that's interesting.
Jerry can call in and deny that.
Well, we had a bad fire one Easter. Remember on Easter Sunday, the year that the Nardale Hotel
yes.
burned, it was then situated over by the. What is over there now? Just beyond the Chamber of Commerce Information Log House off the bridge. Nardale Hotel used to be mm-hmm. over on the banks of the Chena.
For the USO?
Mm-hmm.
For the USO.
The Fairbanks Hotel.
That was the Nardale Hotel.
Hotel.
Oh, first, the Nardale,
yeah,
the first Nardale
one.
Hotel.
Oh, the first one. Oh, and then
that was the fire that Eva McGowan.
No, that was the other one where the Second Avenue location.
That was on Second. That was the later one that was built.
We should have a program on fires. And get the fire department in. But some people maybe don't know about how the dentist started the fire. Do you?
A candle, a curtain blew.
I should know because when we do our Fairbanks history tour for the children, that's part of it. About the curtain, it was a hot, hot day. I can just hear them saying that. A hot day, and somebody was in the chair, and he had an alcohol burner or something. I guess he was going to sterilize his instrument. That sounds good. Let's mm-hmm. say that's what he was doing. Anyway, a little breeze blew the curtain into the fire, and the town went up in flames.
Well, I'd like to say, too, that my father had a business in the block beyond Cushman Street, between Cushman and Noble. And in order to save part of the block there, they wanted to dynamite his building there in order to stop the fire, but of course they were not able to do that. Then later on, the city bought the piece of property where now Blanchfield Street was. And I believe still is Blanchfield mm-hmm. Street. It's right across from the co-op drugstore. My father owned property there between 1st and 2nd Avenue, between Blanchfield and it was the Black and White Liquor Store that was owned by the Piggly Wiggly on the corner, and mm-hmm. then later, believe the building then later belonged to Mrs. Ford, finally owned that pieces of property in there. But there were several pieces of property that my father owned in there. And then in the summertime, he would have what you call a beer garden, and he'd have, and this was on 2nd Street, and he always opened it up for the 21st of June, which was always a big celebration here in the early days, and they had a parade, and then the 4th of July. So 2nd Avenue was the center of attraction mm-hmm. and where everything took place. And so he had this beer garden, and he had little tables with awnings over them, and served sort of like Dutch lunches, sandwiches, and so forth. And it was, I heard so many, many people talk about it, and they always looked forward to this during the summer months. And then, of course, in the wintertime, that was closed down. And then he had a cigar store and also an ice cream parlor with all the fancy little ice cream tables and chairs. Mm-hmm. And we, of course, were not allowed to go into the ice cream parlor during the time they had the he had the card games, you see, in the back of the cigar store. So on Sunday... On Sunday, it was only opened and for the family. And he'd call my mother after church and said it was all right for us, bring the family down. And that's when we'd have our ice cream and sit in the little chairs around the table.
You know, Blanchfield was across from the co-op?
Yeah.
Yes.
We called it Blanchfield Alley.
Actually,
because there were several buildings there then.
Oh, yes.
The fence.
There was the Piggly Wiggly, the big mm-hmm. Piggly Wiggly
store.
Uh-huh. And it just went between the buildings.
Now, that's what they should do. The city was, you know, the city council did so well stripping that block out for their development. They should take all the old houses in Alaska Land and move them down there and make more parking at Alaska Land.
Well, there's an idea. Do you suppose they're listening, someone?
I doubt it.
Nobody's called us. It's 474-5044. Maybe I'm doing something wrong, but that little red light hasn't flashed yet. Maybe nobody's listening. Oh, that reminds me. I have a friend in Manly tonight. She said if she got there in time, she was going to listen. And she wants to know where Jesse Bloom's house was. She knew Jesse Bloom through the Girl Scouts, and she said to ask you and put it on here. So she,
well, we know. You go ahead and tell.
You go ahead, Charlotte.
Well, the Bloom house was directly across from where the flower shop is on 3rd Avenue, and the building that the bakery and the little restaurant is this west of the co-op. It's between Cushman and Lacey Street. Actually, it's right by the beauty shop. Actually, the property, the Blooms lived in a long kind of a cabin-type house in the early days, but that place that the Aladdin Beauty Shop is in was the home that the Blooms later built there. So that's the location. If anybody knows where the Aladdin Beauty Shop is, well, that was the location that the Blooms lived in. However, their first home, went way back like the rest of us in those days, was a log structure that was about 3 or 4 rooms. You know, I think there was 3 rooms in a row. Now, if I've made mistakes, Edna, you correct them, please.
I believe you're right. You were right.
Oh, and then we have a call. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Ben Stringer. I thought I'd call to say that there is indeed somebody that seems to be really enjoying your discussion. One of the reasons I wanted to call also was to say I didn't catch the first part of the program.
Did I cut her off?
She's talking. I heard her.
I didn't hear what she said.
Sandra Stringer, I did something terrible. Call back and we'll hear you again.
She's one of the people on the assembly that always vote for the citizens instead of for the business that wants to move in on top of you. So,
well, while we're waiting for her call, would you like to tell them about the old schoolhouse? Not Old Main that was celebrated this year, but maybe...
The old schoolhouse that was up on 8th and Cushman.
Same location, yes.
Where the central offices are right now. And, of course, it was a little old red schoolhouse. I always called it the little red schoolhouse anyway. And it had stairways in the front of
there
the building up from one side and then up the other.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And it had classes from first grade through high school. And however, there were teachers. The first and second grade was taught by one teacher, and third and fourth by another, and another teacher for fifth and sixth. Mm-hmm. And I've forgotten, though, how many high school teachers did we have, Charlotte?
Oh, golly, I don't remember either, but it was... It was a very small operation compared to what we have nowadays. I think maybe we have somebody on the line, so I'll give her a chance.
I hope it's the same person. Hello, you're on the air again.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, thank goodness. This is Sandra Stringer. I called a moment ago to see that there is somebody listening, and that I have been enjoying listening to the program. Someone mentioned a little earlier that talking about some of the homes in the hills around Fairbanks. I would hope that at a later time, perhaps a program might be devoted to some of the farms and homesteads that early on were built in the Farmers Loop area, or perhaps out along Badger Road or on Chenier Ridge, because that would be very interesting to me.
Oh, yes, I think
there were many
too.
Of them, too.
But I find it very fascinating to listen to the discussion and to... I had read a few things about the development of the downtown area and some of the people who originally pioneered Fairbanks and whose homes are still standing either downtown or in Alaska. Mm-hmm. But it's a rare opportunity to hear people talk about them. So I'd like to thank you.
Oh, well, thank you very much for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Going back to the old schoolhouse, your father was in charge of
he was the custodian of the old schoolhouse, and he was there for many years. In fact, from the time that I entered school and during my high school days, and then he retired after that. And then it was in when was it that they had the old school building burned in 1932. It was December of 1932 when the building burned, and my father was custodian of it at that time. And how I remember the date of this fire, I was in the hospital. My son Dick was born at that time on the 29th of November, and the building burned on the 1st of December. And, of course, then they had the whole school in many parts of the city. The Presbyterian Church was a place where they held school, and also the Moose Hall. And my father was custodian there at the Moose Hall when they held their classes there. And there were many other places, of course, they held it. Can you go on from there, Charlotte? Do you add to it?
The only thing I can say was that it burned the year after I was out of school, and we watched it from the kitchen window. We saw the building going up in flames, and some remarks were made by some of the kids, well, why didn't that burn last year? It was a fine old school, though. Mm-hmm.
I graduated from the Fairbanks High School in 1927. There were 13 in that class of 1927. It's a far cry of how many graduate from the high school today.
Not to change the subject, but I am. I wanted to ask you, or anybody here, remember Dr. Ryan's old house that was on the corner of 3rd and Cowles? Where
yes.
did it get moved to?
That was,
wasn't that one that had been brought up for Nina also?
But where, yes. where, it was moved away, it wasn't torn down, but where did it go?
It was destroyed during the flood, during our last flood in 67.
Mm-hmm.
The Erickson's lived in there in 1967, and it was destroyed and condemned.
Not to change the subject, but I am. I wanted to ask you, or anybody here, remember Dr. Ryan's old house that was on the corner of 3rd and Cowles? Where
yes.
did it get moved to?
That was...
Wasn't that one that had been brought up from Nina also?
But where...
Yes.
where it was moved away. It wasn't torn down, but where did it go?
It was destroyed during the flood, during our last flood in 67.
Mm-hmm.
The Erickson's lived in there in 1967, and it was destroyed and condemned. Mm-hmm. I believe I am right about
this. I think you are too, Edna.
And so it was condemned and, of course, taken down, and then other... units was moved in. One unit on the corner of 3rd and another unit on the corner of 4th.
I know the people that live there now, but I just wondered, I remember it had that pretty porch all around it, and I thought it had been moved elsewhere.
No.
Just so many of the, well, I guess I mentioned before, you drive around, you see a house, and you, oh, I used to know that house. I was telling you the other, the old house that I remember that lived in it, and I saw one day, this used to be down. Now I can't bear it is on it, but it's moved out.
That house that the Ryans lived in was brought up from Nenana and situated on that lot. Before that, there was a little old log cabin on that property in that after she was married. And the Gilchers.
Bill Gilcher,
he was a sheet metal man here in Fairbanks, and he and his wife lived there, and they finally left. And I guess that's when Ryan's moved in.
Uh-huh.
It was another, an attractive house.
Another one of the older houses is the R.C. Wood home on the first day. And that was later bought. And it's wonderful. And what
I took long back with people stuff and everything.
Were the Oddfellows and Rebecca's, did they used to be active?
We still are.
We still
Rebecca's are active.
You're looking at two members.
Rebecca's.
Two of us.
Yes, both of us are Rebecca's.
And the house down there. Mrs. Sutherland's.
Well, that's gone, of course.
Yes, of course.
Yes,
Dr.
but
Sutherland.
It was.
Yes.
Maybe someone else is gone. Well, I remember that was where I first... I think Mrs. Sutherland was still alive then. I remember she had pigeons. I shouldn't mention pigeons in front of Edna. Hello, you're on the air.
Good evening. Is this Ellen Witcher I'm talking to?
Yes, you're talking to Ellen Witcher.
I thought I recognized your voice on the air. It's a pleasure to hear this kind of a program. I have a question regarding the cute little log house in Garden Island that Connie Hammond owned. Is there anyone there among your panel who would be able to give us a little bit of history of that at the corner of Clara and Ninny?
I know the house that she's referring to, but I don't know the history of it. However, Margaret Hawk, Mrs. Evan Hawk, was is a neighbor of Connie's home there, and she probably would know something about it. Maybe we could run that down for you. She's also a Rebecca member.
Oh.
Do you know anything about that house, Edna?
No, I don't. No.
It's been there a long time, I know, mm-hmm. but I have no idea about the history.
I don't know either. I know the house, but I don't, mm-hmm. I don't
okay,
know.
Well, appreciate it.
Now, you know me. Who are you? Or maybe I'm not supposed to ask such... Your
someone,
voice is very familiar.
Right. Someone with whom you taught years ago when I stayed with you back when I was a single gal. And if you don't recognize my voice, I won't tell you on the air, but I'll call you on
the
day.
Oh, I know who you are because weren't you thinking of buying that house? Is that who you are?
That's who I am.
And you don't want me to mention your name.
No.
All right. No, all right. But afterwards I can tell them, can't I? All right.
Tell me, is this program a regular feature?
Of course. It's every Saturday night from 7 to 8, the Home Fires Radio Show. You mean you've never heard it before?
This is a first for me. Right.
Well, but not the last.
No, not the last.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, it's a different subject every time, and you're free to join in.
Thanks a million. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, maybe, Edna, since if we work on this together, we can remember to ask Margaret Hawk about the history of that place. And since this is a friend of Ellen's, why, we can give the information to Ellen, and she can see that she gets it. We'll try to do that.
Thank you. Remember, if there are any other people who'd like to call, 474-5044. Well, we've talked about houses, and then we got off on schools and fires. Let's get back to houses again. Janet, what do you think about all these new houses around town?
Most of
all the condominiums and townhouses and so forth.
Most of them aren't nearly as attractive as the old houses.
And they don't have as much room in them either, I guess. But I realize people do have to live somewhere. But it is sort of changing the appearance of town, isn't it? I suppose that's inevitable.
There's an attractive one built in the style of the Kitty Hensley home on 4th Avenue between Cowles and Kellam. And those people should be given a pat on the back for you know, building within a historical style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she liked the Kitty Hensley house so much she wanted everyone to see it.
Yes, I heard that story.
Uh-huh. But I don't know. Have you been in it?
No, I have not.
Yeah, it's in Edna's neighborhood. Have
yes,
you been
it
in
is.
Edna?
I've been invited to come over.
Maybe she'll invite all of us if she's listening.
I'm sure that sometime I will go over, but I'd really like to go in.
It's very pretty from the outside. I wanted to dispel a myth about our house while we were on the air tonight, so maybe I should take this opportunity to do that. We have a plaque, a metal plaque, on the outside of our house by the back door, which has built in 1906 written on it or stamped into the metal, and that's a lie. The house wasn't built in 1906. I don't believe that anyone's ever been able to trace back the exact records that date when the house was born, but we've guessed that it was between 1912 and 1916. Two owners before we had the house bought that sign at an auction or a garage sale or some such and thought it would look good and put it on the house. And people, it fools everybody. There's a tourist bus that stops twice a day by that very side of the house, I know, just to point out that sign and tell all those people from out of state how old this house is, and they're off by at least 10 years because it wasn't built then. But it's we haven't felt strongly enough about it to take the sign off. But it's kind of fun to have a secret like that.
Not anymore.
And now it's not a secret.
Now it's not
the millions of listeners.
That's right.
Everyone no, listening. The tourists will still believe it.
Well, I know the bus drivers do give out interesting information. One day when they stopped it, when the Sam White house was still standing, and he had that great pile of horns. I believe they're at Alaska
yes,
Land now.
Mm-hmm.
And the wind was just right, so the voices drifted over, and I heard the bus driver telling the people that the man who lived in that house was a great hunter, and Sam had never... He had been a game warden, and these were just things he picked up along the way. But it made a great story, and then the tourists would all take pictures, you know.
Our son thinks that they stop on that side of the house so they can peek into his bedroom window upstairs early in the morning.
I see. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening. You're talking about old houses and all. I'd like to put in a little plug. If anybody wanted to look at the new houses, they can, on July 14th, the American Association of University Women is having a house tour of some of the finer new homes going into the area.
Oh, well, thank you very much for putting in plug. As you, I think I recognize your voice. Perhaps your wife has something to do with it, too.
Well, she just might.
You know, well, that's true. We do every summer on the Saturday before Golden Days, we have a house tour. But we have tried to have some of the old houses on the tour. Maybe someday the Wallace House will be ready.
In about 10 years.
In 10 years. All right, I'll put you down on the list. But we did have the house next door to you, Dr. Arp. Their house was on the tour. And there are others that we've wanted to get. But, you know, not everybody wants to have 300 people going through their house looking at things. But it's a good way to see the newer houses. It's fun. So July 14th it will be this year.
Good night, Alan.
Good night, Steve.
I was thinking the other day, from where the old library is, on Cowell Street, the west side of Cowell's, from 1st Avenue to 9th Avenue, there are most of the homes in that area, even a couple over on the east side of Cowell's, too, are really old homes. I know Dr. Arp's home is in there as well, but it's not as old as some of the other homes.
1928.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what your husband said.
They started to build that, and I believe it was completed in about 1932.
And those are the original shingles, and also that was the first set of colored fixtures, tub and toilet and the whole works, that came to Fairbanks.
That's right.
We have a picture of our house when it was so old that instead of cement sidewalks, there were boardwalks, and on the lot next door where the Arp's house now stands was a little old wooden shack.
Yes.
And the tennis court. Was
yes.
Nice.
Oh, yes, and the tennis court.
We have another call.
Oh, good.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering if I could get a little background on the Bloom family and their impact on Fairbanks. I've heard their name, but I really don't know what they're all about.
Well, I'm sure that...
Start with that.
And it can tell you.
I didn't hear.
They wanted a little impact about the Bloom factory.
Bloom family.
Family, I mean. That was Bob Bloom and his wife, Jessie Bloom, and they had four daughters. And he had a store here. And what was it? It was a...
General merchandise.
That's
mm-hmm.
what I
on
was
First
thinking.
Avenue.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Next to the Model Cafe, mm-hmm. wasn't it?
Yes, it was in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very. She was especially active in things around town. She loved to walk, and she never missed a day taking a long walk. And they were just wonderful people. And the girls all were well educated. They had a doctor and a lawyer. Was it a teacher? Mm-hmm. The family moved out of here quite some time ago, and I think we're getting short on time, so I think that's all I can put into this.
Oh, well, thank you, Charlotte. Does that help you? Oh, he's gone. He's gone. All right. Carla, we just have a couple more minutes. Janet, we haven't gotten to you very much because you're new houses. Do you do mostly houses or all kinds of things? You did the school. Rosamond Weller's listening because we mentioned her school.
Lots of different things. I don't do very many house designs at all.
Oh, you don't? Uh-huh. I thought maybe that one. Once I thought I'd be an architect and do houses, but I've given up on that. Did you, who else has something to say in our last moment?
I understood at the time we were doing the survey that the whole area of west side over where the Blooms lived was called Bloomville at one time.
Well, I never heard of that. Did
no,
you?
No,
they weren't
not.
On the west side of Cushman. They were on the east side between Cushman and Lacey Street is where their home was. And his business was also on the east side of Cushman. But they were a long-time Fairbanks family. They came up here in the early years. And incidentally, we were talking about long-time Fairbanks, since my father and Edna's father both came over the Chilkoot Trail. My dad came in 1898.
My father came in 1898, too,
to Dawson.
And then came to Fairbanks in 1904. And my mother and father were married here in Fairbanks at the little old Presbyterian church at Alaska Land in 1906.
My mother came up as a young girl of 18 from California. My grandmother was widowed, and during the days of the gold rush and the Klondike, the people going this way to see make their fortune, my grandmother wanted to come up. She was very adventurous, and mother said, well, what were you going up to the north for? And she said, because there'll be a lot of miners who need their clothes washed, and I'm going to open a hand laundry. She talked my mother into coming, and mother said she'd come up for just 2 years only. She came up in 1900. She never got back to the States till 1950.
Oh, well, I guess our hour is up, and I certainly have enjoyed talking to you, Janet Matheson, and Charlotte Ames, and Edna Lawson, and Debbie Wallace, and Randall Wallace. And thank you very much for joining me on the Home Fires Radio Show. I can't say what it will be next week, what the subject will be, and I won't be here, but someone will be, so listen again next week.
You've been listening to the Home Fires Radio Show on KUAC-FM in Fairbanks. It's 1 minute after 8 o'clock. Good evening. Cloudy with a few showers in the area tonight, a few fog patches by morning. Partial clearing Sunday with a few afternoon and evening showers in the area. Partly cloudy Sunday evening. The lows tonight should be in the low 50s. The high Sunday, upper 60s. Low Sunday night, low 50s. Monday's outlook, partly cloudy with a few showers likely. 1 minute after 8 o'clock is time next for a Prairie Home Companion. Funds for acquisition of a Prairie Home Companion were provided by KUAC sponsors.
From Minnesota Public Radio. Today's broadcast of A Prairie Home Companion is a show we did a year ago last May at Middlebury College in Vermont with Applejack, Margaret MacArthur and her family, the Dissipated Eight, and the Traveling Biscuit Orchestra with Peter Strushko, Stony Lonesome, and the Butch Thompson Trio.
We met somewhere before. Hello, love. Hello, love. Well, where in the world you've been so long? I missed you so since you've been gone. Hello, love. Oh, hello, everybody, and welcome to A Prairie Home Companion. Recorded at Middlebury College in Middlebury, Vermont, on a beautiful spring day in May, with a Dissipated Eight, Margaret MacArthur and her family, Stony Lonesome, Mr. Peter Strushko, the Butch Thompson Trio, brought to you by your friends in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, including those powder milk biscuits, all their taste and expeditions. Hello, love. Uh-huh. Hello, love. Hello, love. We're just a traveling biscuit band. For powder melts, we'll proudly rise and take our stand. Biscuit tunes are what we play. Won't you try a box today? I've known the loneliness and fear. I think I feel it more and more with every year. I live by miracles like you. And then the biscuits help me too. We're just a traveling biscuit band. For powder melts, we'll proudly rise and take our stand. Biscuit tunes are what we play. Won't you try a box today? Hello!
like a dove. There's a man in country that I really love. Hello, stranger, would you like for what you love it? And if I'm hello, stranger, would you like for what you love it? You're a friend of
eyes were blue, my eyes were true, when I lived in Lake Wobegon, long ago, and now I know, joy was mine in my prairie home. Wheat fields in the month of May, wheat beside the long driveway. Now I buy a box of biscuits to remind me of my woebegone days. Oh, woebegone, I remember oh so well how peacefully among the woods and fields you lie. My woebegone, I close my eyes and I can see you just as clear as in day.